Hi. The paper, my presentation today is part of my dissertation, actually, and I'm going to present some of my very preliminary findings that await data collection in the field, which I'll be going right after here in 3 days. So, but before I start my presentation, I would like to start with some illustrations and a story. The story of the Vulpes Kurdistanicum. I'm sure many of you know the story, but just a reminder, as you might see from the picture, Vulpes Kurdistanicum is the Latin name for a red fox that lives in Ara in southeastern Turkey. And the story of Vulpes Kurdistanicum goes back to 2005, when two foundations from Turkey, one operating at the national level, the Foundation for the Preservation of Wildlife, and another local foundation, Association for Beautiful Ara, Ara Güzelleştirme Derneği, get in touch with UNDP, UN Development Program, for a project that will help enhance the environmental conditions and the living conditions for the Vulpes Kurdistanicum. And so the correspondence starts between the UNDP officials and the association in Ara Güzelleştirme Derneği. And these correspondences, of course, include the name Vulpes Kurdistanicum because it is the official Latin name for the poor red fox. But when this name become, it's apparently discovered by a Turkish columnist writing for one of the mainstream newspapers, Yalçın Doğan, he immediately makes this a big issue from his column, and the Ministry of Environment officials alarmingly call with a telephone UNDP officials to get rid of the word Kurdistanicum so the red fox can restfully live with its purified, Turkified name Vulpes. Nevertheless, the organizations that originally took up this project continue calling the red fox, of course, with its original name, VVK. well, what's important and forms the basis of my research here with this example is empowerment of these nine state actors during the course of this incident. I will show three more illustrations. This is taken from a very recent protest from a Laz association after the announcement of the autonomy demand from the Kurdish officials. And it says, two languages are not enough, let us speak Lazuri too. And another interesting one is the Arab association, which they say, we too exist. And this is a final one, a recent prime minister's meeting with Roma representatives and the picture taken afterwards. As the Europeanization process progresses, we witness that more and more groups that have been historically marginalized are empowered through the redistribution of political resources. In Turkey, now I'm going to my paper, enough with the funny stuff. In Turkey, the question of minority rights protection and the broader democratization process associated with it has been historically dominated by discourses related to national security and unity. In this respect, the literature examining Turkey-EU relations has focused specifically on the ups and downs of this complex relationship, as well as the macro-political ramifications, leaving aside the transformation triggered and anchored by the EU of domestic politics, identities, opportunity structures, and strategies. The accession of the Central and Eastern European countries to the European Union encouraged a greater theorization of the phenomenon of Europeanization. Indeed, the experience of the fifth and the sixth enlargements encouraged scholars to acknowledge that Europeanization is a complex process that does not necessarily follow a direct correlation with enlargement. In fact, the literature on CECs emphasized the extent to which transformation relied on the empowerment of domestic actors. The key objective of my research is to better understand Turkey's compliance with EU norms on minority rights in the period prior to accession and somewhat irrespective of the overarching progress in the negotiations between Brussels and Ankara. I define Europeanization as the process through which European rules and practices penetrate the domestic context, causing a transformation at the national level. The outcome of this process is identified as formal and informal compliance with EU requirements. Conceptualizing Europeanization as a process that may take place regardless of or prior to accession enables an assessment of the developments happening at the domestic level separate from the overall accession progress. So I seek to identify how and to what extent the EU process has changed the distribution of political resources in Turkey among different actors at the domestic level. I intend to analyze whether there's more progress with respect to Turkey's Europeanization in the area of minority rights than is assumed or is suggested within the opinions on Turkey's accession process. I suggest that progress with regard to the Europeanization of minority rights is particularly dependent on a bottom-up process and is mainly being driven by non-state or non-governmental actors. Therefore, I propose that Turkey's Europeanization specifically in the area of minority rights should be investigated from a multi-level governance perspective. Put differently, what's under examination here is whether there's indeed more progress being made on the ground involving non-state actors and pro-EU coalitions than Turkey's overall accession progress would perhaps suggest. Therefore, my research question becomes, should the impact of the EU on the domestic transformation in Turkey regarding minority rights be studied through the lens of a multi-level governance model and by investigating how the Europeanization process is empowering some actors while restricting others? Drawing on an important strand of the Europeanization literature, I investigate whether domestic transformation is occurring in the realm of minority rights protection as a consequence of changed actor engagement at the sub-state domestic level and the supra-state level. Therefore, I adopt both a bottom-up approach as well as focusing on the impact of Turkey's integration within European minority rights networks operating at elite as well as civil society levels. The bottom-up approach used in this paper entails the formation of a multi-level governance structure involving a multiplicity of actors that yield domestic change and formal or informal compliance with EU standards. The crucial difference between the two approaches is the way that the relationship between Europeanization and enlargement is considered. The top-down approach argues that Europeanization is the main independent variable leading to transformation, while the bottom-up approach includes a variety of factors not exclusive to the EU. The accession of the CECs and their domestic transformation in line with European rules has given rise to a broad area of research to examine the differentiated impacts of Europeanization in a different context than member countries. Conditionality, which in essence refers to a system of rewards for compliance, was identified as one of the main mechanisms triggering domestic transformation in the CECs. In the Turkish context, as you all know, formal relations between the EU and Turkey have existed since 1959, but the level of compliance was significantly low until 1999. From the opening of the negotiations in 1999 until 8 chapters were frozen in 2006, 9 harmonization packages have been implemented. However, even though the annual progress reports published by the European Commission continue to express concerns over the lack of formal compliance, domestic transformation continues to be observed. Put differently, conditionality exerted on Turkey is reflected in the formal accession process by freezing 8 chapters. However, it did not yield increased levels of formal compliance. Instead, albeit the significant irregularity of progress in the formal accession process, informal compliance and domestic transformation continue to occur as a result of the new multi-level governance model that is formed. This is a very it doesn't signify anything. I mean, it's my technological ability to just draw a straight line with Excel. But I mean, this shows that, like, you know, the formal accession, the irregular formal accession process is the one that is like this. And the transformation that follows a straight line. I mean, what I wanted to show here is transformation continues even though the formal accession process goes up and down and includes several breaks and crises. So one of the unique features, as I said, of the Europeanization process is that it provides the candidate states with a multi-level quality model, which amalgamated levels of governance, displacing but not eliminating the nation state, create multiple power centers and overlapping spheres of authority while reordering the nation state within the overarching integrative framework of the EU. Contemporary Turkey strikes the interested observer as a homogeneous nation-state of the Turks, in which the multi-ethnic, multicultural, and multi-religious representation is largely absent. At first glance, little evidence testifies to her diverse heritage. A second glance, however, reveals a site of multiple contestations, incoherence, and tensions of competing claims over political resources and traditions of centralization. In this respect, I state that through different practices, strategies, techniques, the political space in Turkey has been permeated by a normative temporal order of EU conditionality that can be to a certain extent characterized by its persistence for human rights and democracy. So an inquiry into the historical background of EU-Turkey relations from the particular perspective of minority rights can be argued to point to the formation of the EU conditionality discourse regarding the minority question in Turkey since the beginning of the relations in 1959, alongside its rearticulation within other discourses in Europe regarding minority protection and its culmination in the 2000s. The differential empowerment of non-state actors in Turkey as a result of the EU accession process has had several ramifications on minority rights, and I contend that there are two reasons for this. First of all, the candidacy status formalized EU-Turkey relations while concretizing the prospects for full membership, and secondly, it empowered the non-state actors in Turkey in such a way that they were now able to bypass the state and voice their demands in transnational platforms. As a result, a new multi-level governance model formed where the non-state actors were able to discuss the challenges that they face with European officials while calling for further reform to Turkish decision makers. I'm not going to go into the whole criticisms and all the resolutions passed during the 1980-2000 period, but the European criticisms regarding the political situation in Turkey continued until the end of the 1990s, that's enough, I guess. The 2000s, however, represent a major shift in the slow democratization process. The political agenda, along with the dominant actors in Turkish political sphere, started transforming as early as 2001, while the reform process was gaining significant momentum. One can say that more progress was achieved between 2000 and 2010 than in the 40 years after Turkey's first application to the European Economic Community. Just to give a few examples, okay, thank you. I'm not going to give a few examples of that. just to talk about the civil society, for which I will start my field work in Turkey, it's a very diverse and heterogeneous structure, ranging from business associations to foundations, from think tanks to religious charity organizations. But it's argued that certain civil society organizations have increasingly become vocal for EU-related democratic reforms in Turkey. In fact, it's underlined that even though there's an increased demand from civil society for democratization, the pressures from and support by civil society for EU-related reforms have remained extensively confined either to the organizations related to big business and the private sector, in particular TÜSİAD, the Turkish Industrials and Businessmen's Association, or organizations run by liberal intellectuals such as the Turkish Economic and Social Studies Foundation TESEF, which I was a part of. to give an example, this is a very old, I mean, this data is from 2006, but one can witness a tremendous increase in the number of civil society organizations between 1996 and 2006. The numbers point to an increase from around 4,500 registered foundations to 54,987 actively working NGOs in 2006. So Just to conclude, what I just want, these are very preliminary findings. What is next is I will start my data collection and try to go through the civil society organizations and minority groups working on minority rights reforms in Turkey, and to it will be mainly a quantitative analysis, and I will try to compare to see the statistical significance of the European Union on Turkey's reform process. Thank you.